Tuesday, 25th of June. Alex stands outside the estate where Josie was brought up. It's a low-level estate, no blocks higher than four stories, built around a playground and several winding pathways. Josie appears a moment later. She is wearing jeans and a chambray top with puff sleeves. The dog peers out over the top of the denim dog carrier. "Sorry I'm late," Josie says. "Couldn't get away." Alex leans towards her with a kiss and feels the same awkwardness emanate from Josie she'd noticed the first time she'd greeted her this way. "No problem, not at all." Alex turns to survey the estate and says, "So this is where you grew up?" "It certainly is. My mum's going to meet us at the community hall. Is that okay? And then you can get yourself all set up." "Perfect," says Alex. She follows Josie through the estate towards a squat building at the back. Inside, a woman with dyed brown hair and trendy black frame glasses is pulling chairs around a table. She's wearing a bright print summer dress and strappy sandals. She looks up at Alex and Josie and beams. "Welcome! Welcome! I got some juice in and some pastries." She is not what Alex was expecting. Where Josie is stiff and unanimated, her mother is all expansive hand gestures and chatter. She's glamorous too, clearly takes care of her appearance, sees herself as a woman worthy of attention and respect. She sends Josie to make them teas and coffees in the kitchenette and invites Alex to sit down. "So," she says, eyeing her frankly, "I went and listened to some of your podcasts when Josie told me about you. So inspiring. I would have had a career to talk to you about, but I devoted all my life to this estate. This estate has been my career, I suppose you'd say. Not that I get paid for it. I do it for love." Alex turns slightly to look at Josie. She has her back to them, waiting for the kettle to boil. "Of course," Pat continues, "my first question has to be, why Josie?" "Oh," Alex laughs nervously. She glances again at Josie's back. Josie has asked her not to mention the truth to her mother about why Josie wanted to do this. "Just tell her you're making a series about birthday twins," she suggested. "Make it sound harmless."
"Well, why not, Josie?"
Alex says now. "That was really my starting point. A woman born on the same day in the same place as me. I guess it was a case of the swap babies scenario, but the other way round. We weren't swapped. We went home with the right parents. But what would have happened if we hadn't? What would it have been like for me if you'd taken me home, if I'd been brought up here by you and Josie had been brought up a mile away by my parents?"
"Nature nurture," says Pat.
"Well, yes, to an extent. You know, I studied social anthropology for a while, at Goldsmiths, but then I got pregnant." She sighs. "Had to drop out. So, yes, there's another what-if scenario for you. What if I hadn't got pregnant? What if I'd finished my degree? I'd have got off this estate, wouldn't I, for a start? And then someone else would have to be here doing what I do. Except they wouldn't, would they? And then this estate would be a disgrace, like the others around here. So, yeah, maybe that's it. I got pregnant for a reason. I got pregnant so that I could sacrifice my ambitions and save this estate." Pat trails off and stares dreamily into the middle distance for a minute. "Funny, when you think about it. Strange. But I guess maybe everyone has a purpose. Though some are harder to fathom than others." She directs this point towards her daughter as Josie pulls out the chair next to Alex and sits down. Alex squirms. This woman, she strongly suspects, loathes her daughter. "So, talking of getting pregnant with Josie, and given that you gave birth to her in the same hospital and on the same day that my mother gave birth to me, what are your memories of that day?"
"Oh God, I try not to think about it.
I was 20 years old. I wasn't married. I'd been in denial throughout my whole pregnancy, drinking, smoking. I know that's horribly frowned upon now, but back then it barely mattered. And I didn't look pregnant.
Not until the very end. Was still wearing my size 10 jeans. So I just kind of carried on. And then the contractions kicked in and I tried to pretend it wasn't happening because I wasn't ready. I really wasn't. I had so much I wanted to do. I was halfway through this essay and I wanted to finish it. And I nearly did, even through the contractions. And then it got too much and my mum got us a taxi to St Mary's and 4 hours later the baby arrived. What happened in those 4 hours is not something I ever want to think about or talk about ever again. What time was she born? God, I don't know, I suppose about 8 in the morning. And how did you feel when you first saw her? I felt... Pat stops. Her eyes go across the community hall and stare for a moment blankly. I felt terrified. Alex feels Josie flinch slightly in the chair next to her. Just terrified. Didn't know what to do. Kept going on about this bloody essay. Finished it. You finished it? Yes. Well, newborns, they just sleep, don't they? Finished it. Submitted it. Got an A. But after that, I suppose I just surrendered to motherhood. Let it subsume me. Always thought I'd go back, finish my degree, but... She spreads her hands around the room. Here we are. And in fact, I've probably learned more about life, more about people, through my experiences here than I ever could have in a lifetime of studying books. So, it all worked out in the end. Alex narrows her eyes slightly and clears her throat. And at the hospital that day, when Josie was born, do you remember any of the other women there? Do you remember this woman? She pulls from her bag the photograph that she tucked in there last night. Her mother, in a grey sweatshirt and jeans, her blonde hair cut into a bob and permed, holding newborn Alex, or Alexis, as she had been named by her parents, in her arms, beaming into the camera. I'm about 4 days old here, just home from the hospital. Pat glances at the photo and smiles dryly. God, she says. Elvis Presley could have been there that day and I wouldn't remember. It's all a blur, really is. How old's your mum there? 31. Not young. No, not young. She was building a career. Alex sees a sour look pass across Pat's face. Wow, she says. Nice if you can plan it that way, I guess. Alex blinks. She wants to ask Pat why she didn't plan it that way. She was clever and had ambitions. Why did she get pregnant at 20? Why didn't she go back to university afterwards? But she doesn't. Instead, she slides the photo back into her handbag and says, "Is it okay if we take a look around the estate? You can show me where Josie was brought up, memories, etc." "Finish your tea first," says Pat. And there's an edge to her intonation that makes it sound more like a command than a suggestion. Alex drinks the tea and gets to her feet. For half an hour, Pat guides them around the estate, and the entire half hour is a running commentary from Pat about her achievements. What she did when she did it, how hard it was for her to do it, and how grateful other people were to her for doing it. And it is impressive. The sort of life's work that could ultimately lead to an honour from the Queen. And Alex can picture Pat in a smart two-piece suit and a slightly eccentric hat, bobbing on one knee in front of the monarch, a haughty smile on her face. But it is clear to Alex that Pat is actually a raging narcissist, and that no child of a narcissist ever makes it out into the world unscathed. This knowledge adds nuance to her view of Josie, helps make more sense of her. Pat leads them to her flat where Josie lived when she was a child. It's on the ground floor, with a flower bed outside. Pat lets them in. "Here," says Josie, opening the door into a room that is painted pink and dressed for a young girl. "This was my room. And this was where I first saw Walter. Through the window." Alex stands for a moment and absorbs the energy of the room. pictures a young Josie peering through the slats in the wooden Venetian blinds that had once covered this window. Back in the kitchen, she touches the top of the dining table. "Is this where you were sitting when Walter ate your birthday cake?" Josie smiles. "Yes. Not this table. This one is new, but yes, right here." Alex turns to Pat. "Did you know?" she asks. "That day, Josie's 14th birthday, did you know what was going to happen?"
"You mean with Josie and Walter?"
"No, of course not. I mean, come on. He was older than me. How could I have thought? How could I have known?"
"And what did you think when you found out? You must have felt quite shocked."
"Well, what do you think?" Pat issues this with a note of dark fury. Alex looks at Josie. Her face is pinched. And Alex takes a breath and stops herself from asking her next question.
8 p.m.
Nathan has been extra nice since the events of Thursday night. Not that Nathan isn't always nice. It's his default setting. But he's been getting back from work early enough to enjoy time in the garden with the kids, to help make dinner, to watch a show and look at homework and chat and be part of the family. He had no explanation for Thursday night other than that he lost control. He has promised that he won't do it again. And for now, bathed in the warm waters of marital harmony, Alex is choosing to believe him. Now, as they clear the kitchen together, he says, "Oh, by the way, I'll be working from home tomorrow."
"Oh," she says, "how come?"
"Just have a ton of paperwork to catch up on and no appointments in the diary. Thought I'd make the most of it. Maybe I can take you out for a cheeky lunch."
She pauses. She hasn't yet told him about her new podcast project with Josie. But she will be here tomorrow morning at 9:30, and Alex will need to explain her to him. She says, "I've got an interviewee coming in the morning."
"Oh, okay. I thought you'd finished your series. Is this something new?"
"It is. It's kind of an experiment, I guess. It's the woman from the pub the other night, the one who was my birthday twin. I'm doing a thing about, birthday twins, you know, the randomness of life, the otherness of strangers, nature nurture, that sort of thing." Her face flushes with the white lie, and she turns away from Nathan so that he can't see it. Nathan looks at her skeptically.
"Sounds different."
"Yes, exactly, different."
"Difficult to pull off?"
"Maybe, but actually there's a couple of compelling things going on with her already."
"What sort of compelling things?"
She draws in her breath.
"A husband who groomed her as a 14-year-old child, a narcissistic mother, two problematic children, and brushes with social services. But the compelling things feel precious somehow, half-formed and delicate, not yet ready for the judgment of her husband."
"Well," she says, "you'll have to listen to the podcast to find out."
Nathan raises an eyebrow humorously.
"Fair enough," he says. "Fair enough."
Alex pulls a full bag out of the bin, ties a knot in it, and takes it to the front garden. She stops after she's dropped the bag in the wheelie bin and stares into the inky summer sky, waiting for some time to pass. She doesn't want to talk about this with Nathan. Not right now. He doesn't deserve her confidences. He doesn't deserve to know every last thing she does. Nathan has his own priorities. His own secrets. She should have some too.
Wednesday, the 26th of June. Josie is breathless by the time she arrives on Alex's doorstep the next morning. It's all she's wanted to do. The only place she's wanted to be. And she's walked extra fast to get here. She pulls a tissue from her bag and wipes the sweat from her forehead and upper lip before ringing the doorbell. She is all primed for the soothing, beatific face of Alex Summer as the door opens, but instead, there is the husband His features are rough and raw, the sort of man who is only attractive because of some base elemental factors to do with chemicals and attitude. There is not one thing on his face that Josie could pick out for special mention. Even his eyes are a sludgy, indefinable colour. He has stubby eyelashes and a two-day beard growth that contains every shade that hair can be, from silver to red to blonde. His mouth is tight and thin. He wears a sloppy t-shirt and grey joggers and peers at her curiously over the top of a pair of horn-rimmed reading glasses. He clicks his fingers and says, "Josie." She nods and says, "Hi. Alex is expecting me." He lurches towards her suddenly, and for a terrible moment she thinks he's going to kiss her, but then she realises he is aiming for Fred's head, poking out of the dog carrier. "Well, hello," he says, recoiling slightly when Fred begins to growl at him. "Aren't you a feisty little dude?" "He? She?" He offers Fred the backs of his fingers to sniff, which he does, gingerly. "He," says Josie. "Fred. He's a pomchi." "A pomchi," says Nathan. "Well, I never. Anyway, come in. Alex is just in the kitchen." She appears, from behind her husband then, her face betraying some regret that it was he who met Josie at the door and not her. Josie smiles at her and bypasses Nathan, her arm just brushing against the cotton of his t-shirt, close enough to feel the clean heat emanating from his flesh. They walk through the kitchen, where the cat is sitting on the kitchen island, looking like a pretend cat. The dog growls quietly as they pass it. "We'll be about an hour," Alex calls over her shoulder to Nathan, who is still loitering in the hallway. "Okie dokie," he calls back, distantly. This time, Josie tries to absorb every last detail of the kitchen. The fridge, she now realises, is not chrome at all. It is hidden away inside cabinetry that matches the rest of the kitchen. There is a huge cake mixer on the counter that's the same milky blue as the front door. There's an upholstered window seat overlooking the garden, scattered with cotton-covered cushions in numerous shades of ocean blue. There's a row of plastic shoes and boots lined up by the back door. The cat's food bowls are made of copper, and the chairs around the kitchen table are all different shapes and sizes. "How are you?" Alex asks her as they cross the lawn. "Oh, I'm fine, I suppose." "You seemed a bit stressed yesterday." "Yes, I was a bit. My mum always makes me feel like that. I mean, I know she looks very together. I know she gives off this vibe of being a decent person, all her talk of saving the estate and everything. But believe you me, she's not what she seems at all. She was a terrible mother, Alex. A terrible, terrible mother to me." "Actually, I could see that, Josie. And I'd like to talk about it today, if that's okay with you." Josie shrugs. "I suppose so, I don't really know. If you think it will be good for the podcast, then yes." "I think it will be great for the podcast. But of course, you'll get final approval before it goes to air, and if there's anything you don't like, I won't put it in." In the studio, Alex makes Josie a cup of coffee from behind the Nespresso machine, and Josie stares at her from behind. She's wearing a long, filmy top over leggings. Through the fabric, Josie can see the knuckled impression of her spine and the outline of a sports bra. "How was your weekend?" she asks her. "Oh, goodness. That feels like a long time ago now, but yes, it was nice. I saw my sisters on Sunday. That's always a good thing." "What are their names?" "Zoe and Maxine." "Nice names. What did you do?" "Long boozy lunch." "Long boozy lunch." The words wash through Josie like a dream. She nods and smiles and says, "That sounds good." Alex places Josie's coffee in front of her and then sits down. She tucks her hair behind her ears and smiles at Josie. Right, she says. Let's get these headphones on and start.
Shall we?
And I wanted to start where we left off last time, with Walter, and how you two became a couple.
This is a recording from Alex Summers' podcast, captured on the 26th of June, 2019.
Oh, yes. So now we're at my 15th birthday. Me and Walter were sort of friends by that point. He always stopped and had a chat with me if we crossed paths on the estate. He always waved, said something nice to me, you know. And on the day I turned 15, Walter ran off to me when I was walking to school. He'd remembered my birthday from the year before and he'd bought me a present.
What did he get you?
A bracelet. Look, this one.
You're still wearing it? Wow.
Well, why wouldn't I? We're still together. And then my friends took me to the park after school that day, to the rec, and there was this boy. He was called Troy, I think. And Helen really wanted me to, you know, kiss him. I hadn't had a boyfriend yet, and she was always trying to get me to go with a boy, and I did not want to go with a boy because they were all disgusting, honestly. And he'd been drinking cider, and his breath, I can smell it even now. The sourness of it, rancid in my face as he came towards me. And I just got up and left, and as I left, I knew that I was done. Done with being that sort of teenager. I went home. My mum said, "You're back early." I told her I wasn't feeling well. She asked me if I'd been drinking. I told her about the cider and the boy, and she told me I had good friends, that I should make more of an effort with them. I said, I do make an effort, but then they do things I don't want to do and there's not much I can do about that. She said, what do you want to do, Josie? I said, I don't know. How am I supposed to know? What did you want to do when you were 15? She stared at me like she couldn't believe I was anything to do with her, and she said, I wanted to take over the whole world, Josie. That's what I wanted to do. I said something like, well, I'm not going to take over the whole world drinking cider in the wreck, am I? And she said, you're not going to do it sitting in here with me either on your birthday. So I said, fine then, fine, I'll leave. And I slammed the door and stormed through the estate, down to the cabin where Walter worked. I was just going to thank him for the bracelet, but I knew what was going to happen. I felt powerful then. And he took me to the pub. I sat in a pub with a 42-year-old man and I was 15, and he poured a shot of vodka into my lemonade and he kissed me. And I remember looking down at my hands, at the pen scribbles on them from school, and looking down at my shoes. These battered old kickers with the little leather tags that everyone wore back then, and thinking, this is it. I'm jumping. I'm going. I'm leaving this world. I'm entering another. It was almost as if I knew, even then, that there was no way back. That once I'd befriended the monster, that was it. For life.
Midday. Oh, my God. Alex whispers to herself an hour later, after closing the front door behind Josie. She stands with her back against the door, her arms behind her. Oh, my God, she whispers again. She closes her eyes and tries to gather herself, but her head is spinning. She'd hidden her shock when Josie was talking, nodded furiously, made encouraging noises of interest, interjected with neutral questions, all the while resisting the temptation to say, fuck, Josie, you married a paedophile. She goes back to the shed to tidy up her studio, gather the cups and saucers, lock it up behind her,
In the kitchen, she loads the cups and saucers into the dishwasher and then she heads to the downstairs toilet, the one tucked under the stairs. After she's used the toilet, she turns on the tap to wash her hands and then stops when she realises there's no hand wash. She looks behind her. She looks on the ledge that runs along the floor, covering the water pipes. She looks inside the cupboard under the sink. She washes her hands without soap and then asks Nathan, when she walks back into the kitchen, "Did you do something with the hand wash in the downstairs toilet?"
Like what?
Like move it, get rid of it. Only put it in there a couple of days ago.
No, he replies.
Of course not.
Maybe it was your weird friend.
Alex scowls at him. Don't be ridiculous. Must have been one of the kids. I'm sure it'll turn up.
1 p.m. Josie tucks the hand wash into the back of her underwear drawer with the Nespresso pod. It came in such a pretty bottle. Dark grey, with a cherry blossom print on it, like Japanese art. And it smells like Alex. The experience of being at Alex's house again has given her a strange kind of energy. Meeting the husband was a bonus, although she doesn't know what Alex sees in him. And using their beautiful toilet, with the mottled glass mirror and crazy wallpaper with peacocks on it. The posh hand wash. The soft black towel hanging from a golden ring. And the interview itself. Reliving the early days of her relationship with Walter. Telling her about her terrible mother. The look on Alex's face of rapt fascination. As though Josie were the most interesting woman she'd ever met in her life. Buoyed up, she walks to Erin's bedroom door and puts her ear to it. She can hear the chair squeaking, the buttons clicking, the tinny noises from her earphones. She can smell the layers of her room. But she can't keep ignoring it. It's not going to go away. She pulls down the handle and pushes the door. It only goes a few inches before it stops, wedged up against the piles on the floor. She calls through to Erin, but Erin can't hear her. She pushes a little harder, another couple of inches. She can see a bit of Erin now, the side of her face, her threadbare sheepskin slippers, her hands clutching the controller, pale and bony. She decides that she can't do it. Not today. Josie brings Alex's kitchen into her mind's eye. The brightness of it, the sweetness of it, the children's drawings pinned to the special wall. Then she remembers the way that Erin's room used to look when she shared it with Roxy. It used to have two pink beds in it and a white wardrobe with hearts cut out of it. Where Erin's gaming desk is, there used to be a chest full of dolls and toys. In her head, she hears the sound of two small girls laughing together at bedtime. She closes her eyes and pulls the door shut again.
Saturday, 29th of June. Alex searches the chest by the front door for her pull-on rain cape. The one she bought to take to a festival a few years back when rain had been forecast for the whole weekend. The warm, dry spell is over for now, and the next few days are predicted to be cool and wet. She finds the cape, puts it on over her clothes, and then calls for Eliza. She's walking her to a friend's house for a birthday party, about half a mile away. The pavements are full of puddles, and the traffic makes hissing sounds as it passes by. Alex barely notices Josie, at first, through the overhanging hood of her rain cape. She notices the dog first, looks at it and thinks, oh, a pomchi, like Josie's. Then she notices the denim slip-on shoes, stained wet from the rain, a denim jacket tied at the waist with a matching belt and an umbrella printed with a denim effect pattern, and she says, Josie! Josie blinks at her. Alex! What a surprise. Not exactly dog walking weather, she says. No, it's not. But I could wait all day for it to stop raining and then Fred wouldn't get any kind of walk. Where are you off to? Alex puts her hands on Eliza's shoulders and says, taking this one to a birthday party, just a couple of roads down. She sees Jose's eyes mist over with some sort of longing. Ah, oh, that's nice, she says. How old?
11.
Well, have a wonderful time, won't you? Enjoy every minute.
Or she'll be home in a couple of hours bouncing off the walls on sugar and TikTok.
Well, enjoy. And have a good weekend, Alex. See you next week. Yes, see you next week.
As they carry on down the street, Eliza looks up at Alex and says,
Who is that lady?
Oh, she's the lady I'm interviewing for my podcast.
Why? She seems quite boring, apart from her dog.
Well, yes, but that's sort of the point. The people who seem boring can sometimes have the most interesting stories to tell. You just need to get it out of them somehow.
Alex stays a while at the party, long enough to have a cup of tea and swap some school gate gossip with a couple of the other mothers. Then she makes her way back through the puddles and the umbrellas towards home. As she passes the spot where she saw Josie on her way here, she stops with a start. She is still there.
Oh, says Alex. Josie, what are you doing still out in the rain?
I don't really know. I was just...
She trails off and she looks strangely as if she might be about to cry.
Are you okay?
Yes, yes, I'm fine. I just... What we're doing, it's making me feel a lot of things. A lot of things I haven't felt for a long time, you know? It's making me feel like I've been numb. And when I saw you just now with your lovely little girl, I just... I don't really know, to be honest, Alex. I don't really know. I just sort of couldn't get my feet to work. Does that sound mad?
No, Josie, no. It doesn't sound mad at all. It sounds completely understandable. And listen, let's get out of the rain, shall we? Come on. I'll buy you a cup of tea. Or something stronger? Alex guides Josie into the nearest cafe and sits her at a table while she goes to the counter and orders them both cappuccinos. She adds two chocolate cookies to the order and then brings them back. But Josie is nowhere to be seen.
4 p.m. Josie is soaked to the bone when she gets home. She wraps the dog in a towel and rubs him dry, then she makes herself a cup of tea to warm herself up and pads barefoot into the living room, where Walter is on the sofa watching football.
You're drenched.
Yeah. Don't know what I was thinking going out in that.
The dog looks longingly at the sofa and Walter looks at him and says,
No chance, you stink. Not having you up here.
Josie scoops him up and holds him to her chest. She doesn't like it when Walter talks sternly to the dog. She sits on the other end of the sofa from Walter and stares numbly at the football. She hates the sound of football. The dull bass monotone of male calls, the incessant up and down intonation of the commentators, the whistles and the drums, it sounds like the backdrop to a nightmare, an oncoming army of bloodless killers. It's been the soundtrack of her weekends for 27 years, since she first moved into Walter's flat. She'd watched with him in the early years, professed her enthusiasm for the game, shouted when their team scored, pretended to be devastated when they lost. Although, no, not pretended. It had been real at the time. Everything she thought, did, wanted, cared about back then had been through the filter of Walter. All she'd wanted from the moment they first got together was to please him, to be the person he thought she was, to be his dream come true. She finishes her tea and takes the mug into the kitchen. I'm going to get into bed, she says. I'm feeling a bit shivery. Walter looks up at her, concern shining in his eyes.
Oh, love. I hope you're not coming down with anything.
No, I'm sure I'm fine.
I'll bring you in a lem sip.
Oh, no, but thank you. I love you.
Love you too. But the ooh of his final word is torn in half as something exciting happens on the screen, and his attention is gone from her. She carries the dog into the bedroom and closes the door behind them. She feels poleaxed, beaten up. She doesn't know what happened to her. The last hour is a blur. The rain that descended down upon her, then Alex in her plastic poncho, her daughter staring curiously at her from under the hood of her raincoat, and then a blank. Then sitting in the coffee shop watching Alex at the counter, the beads of rain gleaming on her plastic poncho. Then she'd seen something through the window. What was it? She's not sure. At the time, she'd thought it was Roxy. Had been convinced it was her. Collected her dog, her bag, ran out onto the pavement. No sign of Roxy. Was it real? Or was it a memory, a shadow? Maybe just someone who looked like her. In bed, she searches for Alex's podcast channel on her phone and selects one at random. Lets the sound of Alex's voice wash away the black noise of the mooing football fans from the living room. Monday, the 1st of July. Josie listens to Heart FM through headphones. Behind the glorious crashing crescendos of Greatest Day by Take That lies the buzz of sewing machines, the rumble of the tube trains, the chatter of her colleagues, the loud voice of the current customer. But she focuses on the music, the way it makes her feel, filling up her senses with rightness and certainty. The weekend feels like a blur. She spent most of it in bed. Walter diagnosed her with a summer cold and brought her food and beverages. He took Fred out for her and fed him. But this morning, she'd awoken feeling fresh and normal and headed into work despite Walter's protestations that she should stay home, take care of herself. In her break at 3 o'clock, she makes herself an instant hot chocolate using powder from a jar, and she writes Alex a message. I am sorry about Saturday. I had a summer cold. Spent the weekend in bed, shivering. Think I had a touch of delirium. I'm fine now, though, and looking forward to our next meeting. I can do tomorrow morning. Alex's reply comes a moment later. Oh no, I'm so sorry you were unwell. You did seem a bit out of sorts. Please come over tomorrow if you're feeling up to that. Josie replies with alacrity. I would love that. See you then.
Tuesday, 2nd of July. What does Walter do now he's retired? Alex asks as they begin their recording. Josie sighs. Good question, she says. Not a lot. He's quite happy just being at home, reading the news online, watching sport, emailing family. What family is he emailing? Oh, his sons. They're in their 30s. They live in Canada. Both of them? Yes, their mum emigrated there when she and Walter split up. He's not seen them again since. And they were how old? Josie shrugs. 10 and 12 when they left. He hasn't seen his sons since they were children. No, it's very sad, but his ex wouldn't let him anywhere near them. Why? Josie shrugs again. I guess she was just really unhappy about what happened with me. Alex registers this uptick in the already strange narrative of Josie's relationship with Walter. So, she begins gently. Josie, I'd love to hear more about this, but only if you're comfortable talking about it. Remember, anything you're not happy about can be deleted before this goes out. Josie nods her assent.
So, Walter was married when you met him. There is a tiny pulse of silence, long enough for Alex to read Josie's discomfort with the answer she is about to provide. Yes, she says. He was. But obviously I didn't know. Obviously he didn't tell me. Otherwise I never would have got together with him. I mean, of course I wouldn't. So, hold on. After that day, your 15th birthday, when he took you to the pub, how long was it before you found out that he was married? This time the silence is even longer. Quite a long time, she says eventually. I'd say a few years.
A few years?
Yes. I didn't find out he was married until I was 18. So he was still living with her, right up until then? No, he wasn't. And that's why I didn't know, because he had his flat in London that he had from his dad. But his ex and the boys lived outside London, somewhere in Essex. He went home at the weekends. It was a bit messy, I suppose. Alex nods, but stays silent. It's raining when their session ends a while later, and Alex offers to drive Josie home. After she drops her back, Alex watches from her car as she walks around the corner to see which house she goes into. Alex knows this road. She's been down it 1,000 times, an unprepossessing rat run connecting Paddington with Kilburn. And there, just as Josie had described, a long sweep of huge Victorian villas in semi-detached pairs, all built close to the pavement and shabby and faded with no trees to protect them from the dirty fumes. She watches Josie unlock the door of a house set right behind a bus stop. She sees Walter in the window and is taken aback once more by how old he looks. She tries to imagine the handsome 42-year-old Josie had described kissing her in a pub when she was a girl, but it's hard to do. He has not worn the passage of time well. She sees him turn as Josie enters the room and a small smile break over his face. He mouths something at her and then turns back to his laptop. Josie appears briefly by the window, holding her dog and looking behind her before disappearing again. There is another window next to the bay in which Walter is sitting. This one has denim curtains, which are half opened. Alex can see the shape of a wardrobe and a door. Somewhere beyond that door, she supposes, is Erin, the older girl, the one who still lives at home, the one who had her arm broken by the little sister who left home when she was 16. And then a bus pulls up in front of the house and snaps Alex out of her peculiar reverie. She puts her car into gear and drives home. At the kitchen counter, she opens her laptop and Googles Josie's address. She adds the name Walter Fair, but nothing comes up. She adds the names Josie Fair, Erin Fair, and Roxy Fair, but still nothing comes up. As she'd suspected. Anonymous, like 90% of the population of the world. Even in these days of ubiquitous sticky fingerprints all over social media, most people aren't traceable on the internet. She puts the address into Google Maps and stares at the street view for a while, scrolling up and down Josie's road, looking for something. She's not sure what.
Thursday, the 4th of July. Josie puts her denim jacket on over her t-shirt and joggers and looks at herself in the mirror. It's the same denim jacket she's had since she was a teenager, the one she was wearing on her 15th birthday in the pub with Walter. It's worn on the elbows and at the cuffs, but she has kept it in one piece over the years, kept it looking smart enough to wear. It's her lucky jacket. The jacket she was wearing when her life turned around, when she went from being the sort of girl who drank warm cider with rough boys to the sort of girl who had the love of a real man, who had beautiful babies and a two-bedroom flat. But that girl is starting to feel like a shapeshifter, a fraud, a one-dimensional paper doll. She's blurring in her mind's eye into a human puddle. She rips the jacket off and looks at herself again. She has kept her figure somehow without trying. She looks nice. She could probably wear similar clothes to Alex and look good in them. She flicks through her wardrobe, looking for something that's not denim. Why does she have so much denim? And something that's not grey. She finds a floaty black shirt that she'd bought to cover up her swimsuit once when it was really hot in the Lake District. She puts it on over her t-shirt and joggers and turns this way and the other. She decides she looks nice and she hangs her denim jacket back in the wardrobe. She gets some sunglasses out of her chest of drawers and tucks them into her hair, and then she takes out her dangling turquoise earrings and replaces them with a pair of hoop earrings Walter had bought her for her birthday one year. Walter glances at her as she gets the dog ready for his walk.
You look like you're on holiday.
Do I?
Yes, you do.
Well, it's nice out. Thought I might hang out in the park for a bit, get some ice cream. Walter looks out of the window and then back at her. He says,
You know what? That sounds nice.
I'll come with you. Josie reels slightly. Oh, she says. No, I mean, I'm meeting my friend there, the school mum, you know?
Walter narrows his eyes at her. Are you sure it's not a school dad you're meeting?
He has a playful tone to his voice, but she knows that beneath it, there is a thin blade of anger.
She matches his playful tone and says, God, Walter, you clearly never saw any of the school dads for you even to say that.
He nods slowly and then puts his glasses back on and turns back to his screen.
Well, he says, have fun. See you soon.
She clips the dog's lead onto his collar and leaves the flat.
Oh, says Alex, eyeing Josie up and down on her doorstep 15 minutes later. No denim.
No, Josie replies brightly. Not today. I wasn't in the mood.
I'd love to talk to you one day, maybe.
About the denim?
Would that be okay?
Yes. I think I'd like to talk about it too.
Josie glances about Alex's house, looking for signs of the red-haired husband, but he is not here today. The house feels silent and still.
Just the two of them.
Husband back at work? Yes. Alex nods and smiles. He hardly ever works from home.
What does he do?
He's a leasing agent for commercial property, mainly in the city.
Sounds stressful.
Well, yes, I suppose it is in a lot of ways.
Hard work.
But clearly it pays off.
Josie arcs her gaze around the open plan kitchen.
Yes, yes it does. We're very lucky. Most people work hard, don't they? But not everyone gets to live in a house like this.
I love this house.
Thank you. Not just because it's beautiful, which it is, but because it's so homely. It's not just like a house in a magazine. It's a proper home. It's very you.
Josie runs her hand over the creamy marble of the work surface as she says this. My flat, she continues. It's never really felt like my flat. It's always felt like Walter's. It's all his furniture, his things, and of course it's council, so we can't really spend any money on it. I look around it and all I see is other people's things. And Walter doesn't like stuff on the walls or clutter, you know? It would be a dream come true to have a place like this that I could just fill with things I like.
And what things do you like?
Well, yes, that's half the problem. I don't know. I really don't know. I've just lost my way.
Or in fact, I'm starting to realise I never even had a way in the first place. I handed my life over to Walter when I was a child and never gave myself the chance to find out who I really was.
Josie pulls herself up straight when she realizes she might be about to start crying. She looks up at Alex and smiles as brightly as she can.
"It's not too late for you to find out," says Alex.
"Come on."
She guides her towards the studio. "Let's start right now."
This is a recording from Alex Summers' podcast from the 4th of July, 2019.
He first invited me to his apartment when I was 16, exactly a year after our date in the pub on my 15th birthday. He said we'd have pizza and he'd give me my present. I'd never been there before. We always met in public, or in his porter cabin on the estate after his team had all gone home. We just kissed, talked. And I'd known all along that at some point he'd want more from me, and I made it very clear that when it did happen, it had to be perfect. So he had champagne, he had music, he drew the curtains, lit a candle. He gave me an engagement ring and he asked me to marry him. I said yes, of course I said yes. And then roughly 12 hours after I turned 16 years old, he took my virginity.
Friday, 5th of July. There is a young man standing on Alex's doorstep. It takes a moment for Alex to realise who it is, and then she says, "Oh, Harry, hi. How are you?" Harry is their next-door neighbour's son. Alex has known him since he was a child, but now he's an adult in his last year at university, and she hasn't seen him for a long while. "I'm good. How are you?" "Not bad. Everything okay?" "Well, no, I just got back. Mum's out, and she won't be back until late this evening, and I haven't got a key. She said that you might have a spare." "Oh," she says, turning behind her to look at the console where she keeps things like neighbour's keys. "Yes, I think actually I do. Hold on just a second." She feels through the drawers in the console, but they're not there. "Come in," she says. "Come in. I think they might be in the kitchen." Harry follows her through the hallway and stands awkwardly in the entrance to the kitchen while she goes through more drawers. Eventually, she finds them, in an envelope with her neighbour's name scrawled on it. "Aha," she says triumphantly. "Here they are. I think you were about 10 years old when she gave us these. It was when you went off on your American road trip, remember that?" "Ha," says Harry, taking the envelope from her outstretched hand. "Yes, I do, and thank you." "No worries at all." She leads him back down the hallway, and then, just before they get to the door, she remembers something. "Oh, Harry, by the way, you and your brother went to Queen's Park High, didn't you?"
"Yes, we did."
"And you're how old?"
"I'm 21.
"So do you remember two sisters at your school, Erin and Roxy Fair?" She studies his face carefully as he forms his response.
"Oh, shit, yeah, I certainly do," he says with a wry smile. "Roxy was in my year. She was insane."
"Insane?"
"Yes, scary as shit."
"Oh, that's interesting. In what way?"
"Just scary, you know, hard, aggressive."
Harry cocks his head and looks at her.
"Wait," he says, "do you know her?"
No, I've never met her. I know her mother, though."
"Right.
Apparently Roxy left home when she was 16. Harry throws her another look.
"Left or ran away?"
"Ran away? Why do you say that?"
"I don't know. There were a lot of rumours about her, about both of them, about their home life, like dark stuff."
"Like?"
"I don't know. Abuse, I guess. The older one, Erin, she was so weird, literally the weirdest person I have ever met. I never spoke to her, but I would see her around with these really dark brown eyes, and she was so thin. You know, apparently she never ate solid food. That's what I heard. Never in her life. Only soft food?
He tips the envelope from one hand to the next and then beams at Alex.
Well, thanks for the keys. I'll get them back to you later, in case we need them again in another 11 years from now. See you.
Yes, Alex says, closing the door as he leaves. See you.